Welcome to episode 86 of the Golf Talk Podcast. This is Eric Barzeski. Joining me again, this time from Michigan, is Alan Olson.
Hey, how you doing, Eric?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
Well, considering it snowed, I had snow in my front yard over the weekend. Not good.
Okay.
Anyway, anybody wants to buy a house in Minnesota so I can move to a warmer climate? Never mind.
I'll give you $10.
In this housing market, sold.
Okay. I'll give Adam Scott a 48-foot putt, and he'll knock it in the hole to win a playoff over Ryan Moore, who's still winless on the PGA Tour. Adam Scott winning his sixth official event on the PGA Tour, really his seventh if you count the 36-hole rain shortened. Also won in a playoff over Chad Campbell, Nissan LA Open dealio. Back in the day, this time winning the EDS Byron Nelson Championship.
Yeah, I mean, quite a compelling round of golf. 4 days of golf. He had two of the younger stars, I guess, if you will, on the tour. Adam Scott established himself, and Ryan Moore, an up and comer, who's had a great amateur career. He played well over 4 days, and I really like the redesign of the course. It's a lot tougher than what I remember of it being in the past.
It's a lot more interesting too. I mean, the 18th hole alone, the water feature. I don't particularly care for that phrasing. But the 18th hole is more interesting, and I agree. That's a good point. I think the course was much more interesting this time around than it was last year. Last year, of course, the greens were in horrible shape. Much more interesting. Adam Scott he had a 3-shot lead going into the day, and by the 5th hole, though, he'd blown that lead.
That was a little surprising. That was really surprising. On a day where everybody was struggling, he could have made it quite easily, won by 3, 4, 5 strokes, and really didn't. He really kind of fell apart there for a little while and kind of regained his composure. And I don't know.
Adam Scott sinking a 9-foot birdie putt in the article we'll link to. A 9-foot birdie putt on 18 to force a playoff after drilling a drive 330-some yards. First playoff hole the first time around, knocks it 333 yards, a little bit past his first time around. They both par. They go to 17. Adam Scott is way inside. I mean, Ryan Moore has like a 60-some foot putt. He gets down in 2, and Adam Scott, his 11-footer, never touches the hole. They go back to 18 again. This time, Adam Scott puts his drive in the bunker while Ryan Moore is in good position. Ryan Moore just goes through the back of the green, 15-foot putt or so, foot off the green. Adam Scott from the bunker puts it on the green 48 feet away and then jars it. Ryan's Moore's putt then to extend holes. I'm not sure how it didn't go in, but it just barely missed. So drama, and Ryan Moore still yet to win a PGA Tour event, but obviously as close as he's ever been this time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was really fun golf to watch on a Sunday. Just every hole, the lead went back and forth and back and forth. And I don't know, I kind of found myself there going, no, keep tying. Let's keep playing. This was pretty good to watch. So, good to see Adam Scott. That was one thing that's
some people have said he can't putt under pressure, and they've also said he can't play under pressure, period. And he birdies 18 to force the playoff, and then he plays well in the playoff, maybe accepting that 11-foot putt, and then he buries a 48-foot putt. I mean, a little bit of luck there, but he got it done when he had to, twice.
Right. Oh, absolutely. He played quite well. And for Ryan Moore, what can you say? I mean, the guy was probably one of the,
He can take a lot away from this loss, as it were. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what Paula Creamer can take away from her loss in overtime to Annika Sorenstam, the two playing in an event where Lorena Cho is taking a week off. So they, being two of the top stars in the field, go to a playoff. Creamer started the day one back of Sorenstam, shot 69 to Sorenstam's 70. They go to a playoff. They play the 18th hole again. Paula Creamer almost as close as Annika Sorenstam, say 15 feet away. Her putt hops out of the fringe, though. Rolls 6 feet past. Sorenstam fails to make the same putt she missed in regulation, so she taps in for par. And then Sorenstam's 6-foot comeback putt for par doesn't even get within 6 inches of the hole. She leaves it short. I was stunned. I recorded it because I saw them going to the end, and I wanted to see Creamer knock off Sorenstam, especially after Sorenstam and Creamer had that run-in 2 years ago, I believe, at the ADT Championship, where Sorenstam's ball may or may not have actually crossed over land going into a water hazard, and Creamer, then a rookie or something, stood her ground very firmly. And kind of, the two have not been had. They've had somewhat of an icy relationship ever since. So I was looking for Creamer to do something, and she leaves a putt she has to make to extend the playoff short.
Didn't see it. Didn't see the highlights. Have no idea. All I heard is that the rounds were really long and the pin placements were kind of crazy.
Well, they were crazy for the amateurs because the first 3 rounds of the tournament were a pro-am event, kind of like the Pebble Beach thing without the final round deal. But I did hear that they were a little crazy there. But you don't leave a putt that you have to make 6 inches short.
Pressure. Who knows? hard to say. I mean, the pressure get tour. I mean, no, having not seen that, I can't comment too much on it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, to leave it short, that's kind of bizarre.
That was Kramer's first playoff attempt. So now 0-1 on a consortium. Now has 71, I believe, PGA or LPGA tour victories. Darren Clark getting back in the saddle. He wins the Asian Open with a long birdie putt. Darren Clark, of course, a little less than two years ago, lost his wife to cancer. Good to see him finally get his game back together. Now he's a winner on the European Tour. He had bogeyed 16 and 17 as well, so had to birdie 18 and did to capture the victory.
Yeah, cool for him. You know, I was kind of surprised that, you know, I didn't realize he hadn't won since 2003. Wow. I guess I hadn't realized that he hadn't, you know,
that's years. That's a long time, yeah. And Greg Norman played, so whatever. Not that we care. I'm just surprised to see that Greg Norman shot 71 in a rare tournament appearance and finished tied for 14th. He won't play the Champions Tour, and some people speculate that that's because, like, the PGA Tour is still under Tim Fincham's purview, so don't know how much truth there is to that, but probably a little bit since he's playing on the European Tour in Asia. It's not even like it's a your Australia event, so we'll be right back.
I mark my Titleist with a black dot over the number one.
With two blue dots.
With a red line through the Titleist.
With a DH over the Titleist.
Just two little dots.
I mark my golf ball pretty simply.
It's kind of complicated.
Bowling orange with a striped black line.
Just like this.
Two dots with a black dot over the number.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Welcome back. Our forum topic of the week was started by CBE Golfer, and he wants to know if the Ryder Cup for 2008 is going to be a rout. And by looking at his post, I think he's thinking Europe will be destroyed.
He'll be on the receiving end of the ass-whooping is what he says.
Yeah, and it's a little early.
He lives in Oklahoma, according to his profile. So I'm just surprised. I didn't know they had that many drugs in Oklahoma. I don't see the Ryder Cup as being a rout in any direction this year. I think it'll be closer. I still think the Europeans have the leg up. Depends on what young people we get on the team. I think that's going to be one of the keys, is getting some young people who are passionate about proving to the world that they're good players on our side, on the U.S. side. I think that's going to be a key. And I think if the U.S. team can do that, and, you know, they only get four, they get four captain's choices, but they still get stuck with whatever eight make the team. And of course, four of them are pretty much set. I think if the U.S. team can get some young guys that really want to prove to the world what great players they are, then it'll be close, and the U.S. team might even win. But a rout?
No, not a...
Stop hitting the ganja, man.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. It's not going to be a rout. It's too early to predict who's even going to be on the team. And we know who, four, you know, like he said, we know who four of them are going to be, but without knowing who else are going to be, what young guys are going to be playing well coming up to that event, it's a crapshoot. Rout? Not a chance.
Well, that about settles it, but hey, we'll link to the thread if you want to add your comments in our show notes, so check that out and stay tuned.
I mark my Titleist with three red dots around the number.
Three crosses around the script.
With my initials.
With two blue dots. A black dot here.
Here and here.
Just like that.
With my family's initials.
With an R and a K.
With three blue dots.
Red dot.
Un pequeño círculo.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Turns out Tony Romo wants to do a little bit more than play the week before the U.S. Open in that little Golf Digest 10 handicapper thing. He's one of the three celebrities that's going to play. He's also among the U.S. applicants for the U.S. Open itself. So he actually wants to play there the week later in the tournament. Of course, Tony Romo barely missed out on qualifying last year. I think he qualified in the first stage and barely missed it there, so he didn't quite get to the next stage, but supposed to be a very low handicapper, so maybe he's just looking to get a little leg up here by practicing a week before. If he can, you know, he's already got the NBC thing, you know, locked up, so he gets that round in, he'll be out there before any of the pros will even be out there.
Yeah, hey, more power to him if he can pull it off. He's got the handicap to do it, the game to back it up, and by all means. Pretty interesting to see the amount of tour players whose now their sons are now coming up to play, or at least trying to qualify for the U.S. Open.
Right.
Just, I mean, you've got Gregory Norman and Jason Cook and Eric Weisskopf and Jimmy Sindelar. I mean, it's kind of cool to see these guys. I don't know, maybe I'm getting old. Maybe that's got to be it. I mean, guys that I grew up, some of them watching, now you see their kids are going for the U.S. Open. That's kind of cool.
Well, we were pretty young when Greg Norman was good, you know.
That's true.
We're not quite that old.
Quite that old. So what are the odds of Tony Romo making it?
I'd say 1 in 100 at best. But he's a quarterback, and you know they have nothing to do most of the year. So he's not a particularly bright one, so he has even less to do since he doesn't seem to study game tape or anything. He's a Cowboy, so there's not much good I can say about that in general.
Some animosity about the Cowboys there.
America's team, my ass.
We know the true America's team.
That's right. And don't you say anything else. Augusta National has drawn, yeah, it's not the Patriots, I'll put it that way. Augusta National has drawn another person away from the PGA Tour, and that would be the executive director of the Players' Championship, Ron Cross. He was in his first year of running the Players' Championship this year. It will be held in 2 weeks, and he leaves on June 1st. So he's going to be around, and he'll run the event, and then he's leaving for Augusta National, where he will be the director of corporate affairs, reunited with Masters Chairman Billy Payne, of course. Cross spent 19 years with the tour and was the director for the Tour Championship at Eastlake when Payne was the volunteer chairman, so that's how he knows Billy Payne. Not much of a story here, but something you should be aware of. It's going to cause kind of a ripple effect where a lot of the subordinates are going to be bumped up a level or something, so a lot of changes are coming for the PGA Tour staff in this area very soon.
Yeah, kind of odd, you know, first year taking care of this, now he's going to bolt for Augusta National, which can't blame the guy. Not sure.
Yeah, I might work there for free if I could pay the bills, you know.
What does the director of corporate affairs do?
I don't know, but I want to be the director of podcasting for Augusta National.
Wow, that'd be nice.
They'll just invent it for me. I won't actually make any podcasts because they're way too private for that, but that will make them sound cooler and hipper.
To the younger crowd. Oh, there you go.
That's right.
Do the members have a... Never mind. I wouldn't even go there.
Well, I'd probably have to spend most of my time training them how to use their iPods. And I'm sure Bill Gates, who is a member, would appreciate that.
Yes, I'm sure, with his Augusta Green iPod.
That's right. Tell us about this last story then, Al.
The last one is, well, how much money is it going to take to get Tiger to play in a tournament? Well, to get him to Australia, it could take $3 million cool ones.
Yeah, it says he wants $3 million.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Has he asked for $3 million, or is that just what they speculate that it'll take? It says a $3 million fee would match the going rate Woods charges for non-U.S. PGA event appearances. He was paid $4 million in 2001 to play in the New Zealand Open. See, now, I'm not sure that makes a whole lot of sense. He plays in Dubai. He played a few times in, like, China and Asia, but his mom is Thai, an Asian. And he has a development golf course thing going on in Dubai, so he has other reasons to go there. I'm not sure that that's really his rate. I mean, I'm fairly certain you couldn't get Tiger Woods to just show up if you just said, here's $4 million. I don't think he cares that much about $4 million. That's like 2% of his yearly earnings. So, you know, I doubt he's going to muck with the schedule a whole lot for such a small gain, really.
No, I mean, it seems kind of odd. And the other thing that's kind of odd, too, is the tournament owner and promoters, IMG.
Right.
Which is the same company that manages Tiger Woods. So it's like, is the IMG office in Australia going to have to pay the IMG office in New York? Or is it... It just seems kind of odd. Seems weird.
I don't know. And you know, the people say they want appearance fees on the PGA Tour to make a return because, you know, they say there have been allegations that some people have been paid to show up at events kind of on the sly, you know, or in ways that duck or avoid, you know, the appearance fee rules, which basically say you can't do anything to try to get one player to show up. I don't think that would change Tiger Woods' schedule a whole lot. I think Tiger Woods is very much geared towards playing the four majors, and so are others like Phil Mickelson and the other top players. And I don't think offering them, again, what amounts to a very small amount of their yearly income would change their schedule a whole lot. You're not going to get Tiger Woods to play the week before a major, I don't think. Probably ever.
No. Not for anything. Certainly not for $3 or $4 million.
Right. You can weigh in with your thoughts on that if you'd like. Send us an email at podcast@thesandtrap.com. Post in our forum. I don't know. If you see us on the golf course, come up to us and say hi and then tell us what you think of that opinion. For every link to the stories we've discussed this week, check our show notes out online. For Alan Olson, this is Eric Proseski saying Sergio still can't putt.
Go back to the belly putter or something.